And you are listening to Community Radio KGNU, Boulder, Denver and Fort Collins. And we do have another collaboration with the Boulder Bookstore coming up in a rather more immediate sense, because it is time for our monthly radio book club, which is a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. My co-host, as always, is Arsen Kashkashian, the head buyer at the Boulder Bookstore. It's good to have you in the studio.
Good to be here on this snowy morning.
And it's perfect weather, actually, for the book we're going to discuss, which is White Plains. And it is written by local author David Hicks, who has braved the roads and is joining us in the studio. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here, Maeve.
And we'll talk about some of the perilous journeys you describe in this book, driving in very, very deep snow over certain Colorado passes. So hopefully your journey to the studio this morning wasn't quite so perilous.
Not even close.
Well, Arsen, why did you select this book for our readers?
Well, you know, David's one of our great Colorado authors. A lot of the book takes place in Colorado. I've known David for years, and I'd seen the book in pieces and kind of short stories, and I was always very intrigued by it. And so when Conundrum Press put out the book, I knew I wanted to have him on the show. So here he is, White Plains. It's a great book. Can't wait to dive into it.
And am I correct in the statement that this start as some short stories, or did it begin as a short story and has kind of evolved into a fully blown novel?
Yeah, I didn't mean it for it to be a book or a novel. I was writing stories for years and publishing them. And in about 2009, I thought I should collect them and, you know, publish a collection. But when I did so, I put the more or less autobiographical stories in chronological order, not according to when they were published, but according to the character, I found that it formed something of a novel arc. And then, so then it was a matter of like, oh, well, if I want this to be a novel, I don't want it to be one of those fake novel and stories, you know, like it's really just a collection of stories marketed as a novel. So I deliberately rewrote the whole thing, all the stories, and then added some stories from other characters' perspectives to fill in the blanks. I actually read a book, I think it was in the 70s, by Rand Richards Cooper called The Last to Go. And it was made into a kind of a cheesy 70s movie. But it's good, and it's about divorce, which my book is also about. And he did that. He had each chapter from a different family member's point of view, so you could see the ripple effect of divorce. You could see from other people's points of view just how effective, how destructive it is. So I thought I'd try that, and that's when it felt more like a novel, when I did that.
Well, I thought that was good to bring in the perspectives. Your main character is Flynn Hawkins, who's a professor, or sometime professor, and he gets divorced. And Flynn is a really nice guy. He's got charisma. People gravitate towards him, both men and women. You know, he's well-liked. But he's very passive, and the damage that he does is not necessarily overt, but he does it through his passivity, and it takes the viewpoints of those other characters, I think, to actually see why Flynn is in the mess that he's in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if there's a moral to this story, it's, you know, get your act together and not be such a nice, like, try to do things for other people, because that is what gets him in trouble. By trying not to, by getting into relationships out of obligation, or doing things out of obligation, or trying to be nice to everybody all the time, he ends up not having a self, and as a result of that, not acting with integrity. And then when he has to get out of his marriage, and he quits his job, and he loses his kids in a custody battle, it kind of undoes his whole life. That does anger and upset, and justifiably, everybody. So we kind of need their points of view. We get the ex-wife's point of view. We get the best friend. We get the sister who's very upset. We get the baseball coach. Like, we get other people's points of view to see, just because I think if you're getting from his point of view, you wouldn't really get that. It would be kind of a finger pointing story, like, look how damaged my life is. Look how these people are ruining it for me. It's not true at all. It's really him, and he's the one who's doing it by being passive. By the end, you see this transformation by the end of the book, and I think from passive to active, I think, and the Colorado mountains really do that. I mean, the fact that he bottoms out in the mountains, where we all, or many of us, bottom out, or at least, you know, figure out who we are. That's kind of to me, that's the strength of the book, the Colorado sections.
Well, he discovers how important nature and landscape are to him in a way that he doesn't in the East Coast. Most of the books are taking place in New York City or around Binghamton, New York, White Plains, New York. So what is it about, what awakens in Flynn when he comes in contact with Colorado and maybe into in yourself personally, because it is based on your own story.
Yeah, and I mean, I moved from one of the most crowded counties in America to a county with 250 people. Like, so it there's a huge difference. But I think for Flynn, and for this part's true for me too, that when you get to the mountains, and I lived at 9,000 feet for years, and then when I was here, I lived in Nederland, which is like at 82 or something like that. The mountains kind of mirror back to you, and you could avoid this if you want, right? You could, I mean, people who live in the mountains don't necessarily change their lives. They, you know, they could, you know, drink it away or hide, you know. But if you don't avoid it, they are mirroring back to you your elemental self if you want to see it in a way that, as you and I know in the East Coast, it just doesn't happen. There are buildings in the way. Like, you can't really see the landscape, or the landscape is so generic or bland or nondescript that, you know, you're just existing in it. So if you bottom out in places like that, or if you place like Illinois or Missouri or something like that, not that there's anything wrong with those places, you're bottoming out, and you're bottoming out, and the landscape is kind of bottoming out with you. It's already bottomed out. But if you bottom out in the mountains, all right, there you are. What, you know, what's your deal? Who are you? You're not, for Flynn's sake and for my sake, you're not this phony person you've been. You're not this guy who could be everything for everybody. That's not who you are. So if you're in the mountains and it's cold and it's snowing in August and, you know, it's, you know, dropping down to minus 30, but then it's absolutely gorgeous when the sun comes out, you kind of see who you are, or it's time to figure out who you are. And it's a good place to do it. So he goes to Colorado unknowingly to pursue a sort of an ill-fated relationship. But once he's there, it happens to him. He's still passive, but the landscape has its effect on him. And he, for the first time, allows his self to come out. Mm-hmm. And then he's ready to be the kind of man his kids need him to be.
Uh-huh. One of the things I love about the book, because I'm a reader, is he talks about Hemingway quite a bit. He talks about Thoreau, you know, when he's in the East Coast, certainly, but even when he comes out West, you know, literature matters to him in a really here and now way. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, bringing in those stories, bringing in Hemingway's story, Fathers and Son, bringing in Walden. There's a scene at Walden mm-hmm. in the book, mm-hmm. and how important it was to show that as part of his character.
Yeah, he's a professor of American literature, and he is in one scene preaching, or, you know, he's teaching Walden and living deliberately and living simply. And I think the reader gets during that scene that he himself is a total mess, who's not living that way at all. So he's telling his students to live a way that he himself is not modeling. And he unconsciously gets that, because that literature, two different things, right? Thoreau and Hemingway, but that 19th century literature, Thoreau's Walden, is as American as it gets. Like, you could remake yourself through nature. That's sort of a thread of our culture. But the irony is he's not doing it. And to me, and as a literature teacher myself, books mean the world to me. Like, books mean so much to me. And books were my salvation during a very sad childhood. But at the same time, if you're living just through books, you're not alive. You know, I have a lot of friends in academia who are literature teachers, but they're not living their life. They're living through books. And so every time you bring something up, they say, oh, I read this book about that, or I read an article about that. But, you know, they're not actually experiencing things for themselves. So it's important for Flynn to get out of his reading a little bit and start to live the kind of lives that the authors are writing about.
Well, Flynn is very ambivalent about being a professor or being living a life in literature throughout the novel, throughout the whole book. And yet now you've settled in at Regis. So tell us about your story and how it maybe has diverged from Flynn's, or how that ambivalence got settled.
I've always loved being a literature professor. I think it got settled when I was able to write. I always loved being a literature professor, but anybody at CU or anybody out there listening who's in academia knows that in order to get tenure, you have to publish academic writing. You have to publish analytical writing. And I got tired of that. What I got tired of was not teaching literature, but writing analytical essays about literature. So I switched when I was at when I came to Regis. I asked them if I could write creatively instead of write analytically, and still get tenure. And they said absolutely. So that's changed me completely. So if I love being a literature professor and a writing professor, mainly because I also get to write. I also get to be a writer, and I don't have to spend all my days trying to publish academic writing, which is fine. I still love reading it, but I'd rather be a writer than a person who writes about writers.
We're speaking with author David Hicks this morning on KGNU. It's the monthly installment of the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. My co-host, as always, Arsen Kashkashian of the Boulder Bookstore in the studio. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU, and White Plains is the book that we have been reading this month. And the character that we're talking about, the main protagonist, is Flynn Hawkins. And you talked about how there's so much that he's passive about, and particularly his relationships. And you write so much about his relationships with women, his wife, then his ex-wife, different girlfriends, his children. But really seems to be centrally important to him is the relationship that he had with his father. And in fact, there's a short story that's referenced several times in the book, Fathers and Sons. And so given that so much of this is autobiographical, I mean, was this a relationship that you felt, I got to deal with my own relationship with my dad, so hey, I'm a writer. Let me hash this out on the page.
I love my dad. My dad passed away about 10 years ago. Flynn's father dies when he's a teenager. And to me, when I was young, my sister died. And so I wanted to try to kind of write from the point of view of a character who's suffered this loss, this significant loss, and not talked about it afterwards. So I chose the father because I have I had a beautiful and complex relationship with my dad, and it meant the world to me. It still means the world to me, and he means the world to me. But I had difficulty getting him to show me affection, the kind of affection I wanted. My family is my mom's from Italy, so I'm half Italian and half. My dad's from a typical American mutt, he says, you know, from Ireland, England, and all kinds of places. But my relationship with him is very, very important. But for Flynn, this is more fiction than nonfiction, really. For Flynn, his relationship with his father is enormously complex because he left. He died when he was 16. So he tries to he is not talking about it. This is true of me and my sister too. So when you don't talk about a loss, how does that manifest in your life? Is there something always missing? Are you finding surrogates? So in the beginning, he finds a surrogate, whether he knows it or not, in his professor, Dr. Faustino. But then throughout the book, he's kind of wandering because he's a father, and he's left his kids, not died, but left. So he's now a troubled father figure in his kids' life. And in some ways, this book, oddly, is kind of a love story to my kids, because that happened to me. I left them, and they were without me for over a year. So he's constantly kind of there's an undercurrent of missing his kids and wanting to be a father, and wanting to be a different kind of father than his father was. So that, I just kind of work that trouble throughout the book and see what happens. In the end, he comes back to the kids as a different person, same person, but different, you know. But that trouble affects everything throughout the book.
He certainly becomes more aware. And I was so glad as a reader that by the end of the book, he got some level of emotional awareness. Because, and I'd be interested to hear Arsen's perspective or what you've heard from male readers. Because certainly as a woman, when I was reading it, I just wanted to slap this guy. I was like, you're so clueless.
Yes. You're not the only female reader who's wanted to.
Yeah, he's so passive in his relationships with everyone, and he just goes along, and he doesn't want to offend anyone. Yeah. And in fact, everyone likes him. I mean, on the surface, he's a nice guy, and so there's real nuance to this. Is a nice guy. He's not overtly evil or nasty. So you can certainly like him on one level, but at the same time, you see how incredibly flawed he is.
Well, one of his characters says, I can't remember which one, but she says at one point, she doesn't know. Are you getting the real Flynn, or Flynn the talk show host? And what she means is, are you going to get this glib kind of guy everybody likes, or is there somebody underneath that? I was hoping you could read a passage which captures a lot of what you talked about his feelings about his children, his feelings about his father, And this is towards, you know, about two-thirds of the way through the book when he's making the decision, he's made the decision to return to his children, and he's going to leave Colorado and go back east. So if you could read that passage, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. This is about, what, three-quarters through the book, and he's thinking back. He's left Grand Junction, and he's thinking back on a place he used to go to in Grand Junction, and Nathan and Janie are his two kids. In the middle of the Gunnison River and Escalante Canyon, south of Grand Junction, two enormous boulders are wedged together in the clear, rushing water, creating a giant stone recliner. This was where Flynn used to go when he was missing his children. He would sit there and listen to the water, watching for bighorn sheep. On the day he left Colorado, he had awakened before dawn and turned off at the canyon road to say goodbye to the river. He climbed down the embankment, removed his hiking boots and socks, and waded into the icy water just as the rising sun slanted its rays through a split in the canyon wall. He heaved himself onto the rocky recliner and listened to the canyon awaken, the screech of a hawk, the whistle of a marmot, the wet spanks of a beaver's tail. He imagined what it would feel like to hold Nathan's spindly body again, to breathe in the sweet scent of Janie's skin. He inhaled deeply, trying to remember her smell, and when he did, another image came to him, the smell of his father's jacket the last time he had seen him, cigarette smoke, the slight scent of mothballs, and something else, the faintest whiff of his deodorant, Aramis. It was in his bedroom, a summer morning. His father had come in to apologize for having to miss Flynn's baseball game that afternoon. Flynn had often tried to remember what he had said back. "That's okay, Pop. Don't worry about it." Or was it more like, "What, again?" As the river water rushed past on both sides, Flynn imagined sliding down the smooth rock, his body getting colder and colder until he was submerged in the icy flow, his long hair floating behind him like algae. As the sun climbed up the canyon and warmed the water, he would drown in a rush of brilliance, and he would see his father again.
That's author David Hicks reading from his new novel, White Plains. It's been the selection for December for the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. I'm Maeve Conran, my co-host from the bookstore, Arsen Kashkashian, as always, joining us in the studio. There's a major event, though, that looms large that seems to really impact him when he's on the East Coast, and it's 9/11. He was living in New York at the time, and this also seems to be something that triggers him. So were you in New York at that time? I mean, why 9/11 as a major focal point?
I had just moved to Colorado. I just moved a few months before that. That was my first year at Regis. And in fact, it was my first semester at Regis when it happened. And it was really strange for me to know that there might be family or friends in the building, and feeling so distant from that place. I had Flynn there because I wanted the landscape around him to reflect the disruption of his own life, because he leaves his marriage, he loses his children, he quits his job, he loses his friends and family. So there's this kind of upheaval, and it's triggered by 9/11 because 9/11, you know, my friends who were there all have very different stories about that event. Some of them reacted, some of them ran outside, and some of them just hid in their rooms, and some of them who were in the village watched it on television, even though it was right there, you know, within distance, sight distance from them. So I wanted Flynn to have that be the event that kind of, where he goes from being a kind of an outgoing, charming guy to a really introspective guy who doesn't know who he is. And that kind of does it. And then he makes a bad decision after that to be with Rachel, because they're both kind of lonely and don't know what they're doing, which is kind of what we do sometimes. Instead of facing our own ugliness or our own lack of personality, we sometimes just hook up with someone else and repeat the mistakes we've been repeating. So he does that, regrettably, but it ends up sending him into a kind of a downward spiral that then manifests itself when he moves to Colorado.
You have a story later in the book, or a chapter later in the book, called All the Wrong Moves. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, that kind of encapsulated him for the first two thirds in a way. You know, in the beginning of the book, which I think is a beautiful opening, is him in graduate school. And he's got this professor who's kind of a father figure. But he runs away at the end of that story. He runs away from the love rather than to it, just when he's needed. And then he runs into Rachel's arms when that's the last place he should be. And so it took a long time before he can finally start making the right moves. And he had a coming of age. He really kind of comes of age around the age of 38. Mm-hmm. But I feel like you are seeing more of that. You teach students all the time. Do you feel that there's a longer adolescence that somehow Flynn is kind of a representative of a way of people are taking longer to find their way, maybe? Is that
the truth of that? Well, in Flynn's case, he was, you know, without a father, and his mother had sort of disappeared, and he didn't get that kind of role model that I think everyone needs. His family, his American family is pretty negative, pretty dour. But I do think that's a trend. Either from protection or coddling, which we're seeing a lot now, or just a kind of parents protecting a kid's innocence for as long as possible. And I do see that in my students, who are lovely, absolutely lovely, but they are less capable of being on their own than they used to be, because they're not being put in situations where they could go out and fail. And we learn from failure. So in Flynn's case and mine, we didn't really get a chance to fail because went right from college to a job to marriage to kids. And there's no opportunity out there to sort of figure yourself out. I did think about naming the novel All the Wrong Moves. I thought that might be a slightly too negative title, but it does. It is the theme of the book. I mean, he makes all the wrong moves, starting with that first one where he does miss his father, and this is a father figure, and he's a great guy, and he does care for Flynn. And I had that story. That was the last story I wrote, by the way. It's the first story in the book, but it's the last story I wrote. I had that story. I got to the end. I didn't know what he was going to do. And when his wife, the professor's wife, dies, and Flynn really should go to the professor and say he's sorry and talk to him, he leaves instead. And I just intuitively felt that that was what he would have done, because he's just not ready to face the loss of his father. He's not ready to face a replacement. He doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
That raised a flag for me when he ran away from that situation. And in fact, the professor, whose wife is dying, and Flynn has a relationship with her from visiting the house.
Yeah.
He says, can you come visit her in the hospital? She'd love to see you. Yeah. And of course, he doesn't. And immediately I was like, right, this guy, you know, unless he learns something here, he's going to just have bad relationships, you know. So it was such an early indicator of the fact that he's just not ready to deal with that kind of level of emotional intimacy.
No, exactly. I think if he were younger, if he were older, I think if it were later in the book, or knowing that that was going to be the first story in the book, or at least a flashback to the earliest chronological story in the book, if he resolved that, if he went to Faustino's house and he resolved that relationship, it wouldn't have caused tension for the rest of the book. But I need that to be kind of unresolved and shaky so that there's tension going forward.
There really is an emotional arc in this story with Flynn, and then, you know, he gets to the end, and as I said, he has an awareness and a level of a self-awareness, I suppose, is the best way of putting it. That's very satisfying then as a reader. But was there an emotional arc for you writing all of this? Or did you feel that you had to have that same emotional journey before you could even begin writing about this?
The latter. I felt that I could look back on this part of my life years later and get what was going on with me. Whereas at the time, of course, I lack that kind of perspective. In fact, most things I write, I need years to go by before I can write about it. Even though my impulse is to write right away about something, I need some perspective. Yeah.
You know, the first piece in your acknowledgments, you say the first part of this book that had any sort of publication was Diamond Dash, which is a lovely story with Flynn and his son. But it was really you and your son, because it was published as an essay, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So how does that end up in the novel, and how do you where's the line between truth and fiction, or is it doesn't matter where that line is, or how, you know, I'd be curious.
Yeah, someone, an Irish writer I really liked, said that she writes autofiction, and I thought, what is that? I think that's what I do. But it's really like, you know, what Hemingway did, you know, just taking your life and shaping it as fiction, but it's based on real events, right? So some of those stories, like Diamond Dash, are, except for one paragraph, like absolutely true. Like, I did take my son to the baseball game. He did what, you know, if when you read the book, you'll see what I'm talking about. He does kind of run away from him. And I sent that to, that was my first publication. I sent that to the Colorado Review in 2002 or so. And the fiction editor at the time rejected it. Well, actually, he made a suggestion that I put in more of the ex-wife in that story. And I said, no, it's really a story about the father and son. And then the nonfiction editor at the time, who's now the managing editor, Stephanie Kishwin, she called and she said, David, is there any way this is nonfiction? I was like, why, yes, there is. And I'll just change the names back to the original. And it, and then I called my dad and I said, Dad, I'm about to publish an essay. And in it, you take me to a baseball game, which I don't think he did. And he said, oh, I did. And I said, no, I don't think he did. He said, yeah, I probably didn't. I said, but can I describe you taking me to a baseball game and having fun? He's like, oh, sure. That'll make me look good.
So with the fact checkers from, you know, whatever publication called, we were there together.
I don't know if anyone writes nonfiction absolutely truthfully. You know, there is shaping. Can anybody really remember dialogue exactly?
Right.
As you know? So it's an essay. It's also a story that's crafted. Right, it's got conflict. It's got a kind of resolution. So that's where I live, right there. I live right where I could write about something that happened to me, something that shifted my life. But if I craft it as fiction, then I can make stuff up. But I could also shape it so that it's an interesting story and not just vomiting onto the page, you know, something that I went through.
Well, just in the last minute that we have, given that so much of the book, even though it's a novel, so much is influenced by your own personal experience. What reaction have you had from the real people in your life who may see themselves in this novel?
The only reaction I cared about is that of my wife, who's depicted fictionally as the woman I meet at the end, Flynn meets at the end, Louise.
And in many ways, she's the savior. Certainly, she's depicted.
She's a good character, yeah. I still think she's really a good character. She's a lovely person. And my kids, who actually wrote, drafted two of the chapters, the two chapters from the children's point of view, they wrote themselves, and I kind of edited. So I care a lot about their reactions, and they're all okay. My daughter was very worried about my ex-wife's, her mother's reaction, which was not good. But she also admitted that it seemed to be based on truth. So everyone's kind of, you know, my mother seems proud. Even though she wanted to make sure everyone knows that it's not her.
Is she a chain smoker?
She's not. That was the giveaway detail. It shows that it wasn't her. So she's fine. And it's gotten pretty good reaction from people I know.
Well, it's a delightful read. Thank you so much. David Hicks's
new
book is White Plains. It's been our chosen selection for December on the Radio Book Club. And Arsene, we always end with announcing our upcoming selection. So on January 25th, we're going to hear from author Matthew Sullivan, and his new book is Midnight at the Bright Ideas Bookstore.
Yeah, Matthew used to work for the Tatter Cover. And this book takes place in a bookstore much like the Tatter Cover, and it's a bit of a mystery. And I think it's going to be fun. Matthew does not live in Colorado anymore, but he'll be coming into town, so we'll get a chance to talk to him about it.
He's a terrific guy and a very good writer.
Well, people can read along with us and hear Matthew Sullivan on January 25th and find out more about David Hicks' book, White Plains, online, news.kgnu.org. You can subscribe to the podcast for the Radio Book Club and After Hours at the Radio Book Club on iTunes. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU, Arsene Kashkashian with the Boulder Bookstore. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is just past 9:30. You're listening to Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver and Fort Collins. Stay tuned for the Morning Sound Alternative.